This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
There's a big delay with Lizzie for me today.
It's all three of you guys were like, it was like a step, just like boom, 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 boom.
We were all on today for me.
That is hilarious.
Welcome to season 11 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season, we were inspired by the number 11, which is basically a pair of ones. So this season's theme is pairs or duos. We are talking about ladies who are just a part of a professional pair in some fashion.
As always, we are not experts. We are just sharing stories about the information that we find, as friends having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning together.
Today, we are talking about Ada Gompers, the interior designer with a focus on kitchen design and collaborator of many architects. I'm Nurjiri Rivas, really into Blue Eye Samurai in Houston, Texas.
Hi, I'm Jessica Rogers, watching reruns of Sex and the City in Miami, Florida.
And I'm Lizzie Rahr, and I've been watching Welcome to Wrexham in San Francisco.
Okay, ladies, I gotta say that info on Ada and in English and readily available on the internet was pretty scarce. But I really wanted to share her story this season since we spoke previously of her fellow often collaborator, Liana Zimbler. So let's do it.
Ooh, I mean, I love when the ladies are connected. So I'm excited to learn more about Ada.
Yes, I love seeing the connections.
Also, before we start, I want to let listeners know that today's story has a tragic death near the ending. So I want to give you a trigger warning now. Also, when it's about to occur, I'll let you know so you can decide if you'd like to fast forward a minute.
Good to have a heads up.
Oh, snap. I'm intrigued, but also a little nervous.
I know.
Yeah.
The time, December 11th, 1884. The place, Vienna, Austria. Adele, aka Ada Stepnitz, was born. Her parents were factory dispatcher Hans Stepnitz and Paula Schauerle. Do you guys know what a factory dispatcher is or does?
No idea.
Is it like an announcer or maybe like a PM of sorts?
Yeah, I had no idea. Those are good guesses. I had to look it up. So according to the World Wide Web, factory dispatchers deal with inventory stock, arrange transportation, and order shipments.
Oh, kind of sounds like a factory superintendent.
Yeah, I see.
Mm-hmm. A few sources mentioned that she started out in the field working for 15 years in a commercial company specializing in hospitality architecture, and she was involved in the area of planning logistical processes.
That's a long but vague job description.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Like, what?
So to me, saying that she worked in a commercial company specializing in hospitality architecture and that she was involved in the area of planning logistical processes, like Lizzie says, is a lot of words that still keep this info so vague.
Yes.
And say absolutely nothing. I was like, what does that even mean? Was it an architecture firm or a manufacturer of something? Was she on the planning side, as in drawing layouts? Or was she in procurement? What exactly was she up to for 15 years?
Yeah.
So many questions. And I'm sorry to say, I don't have an answer for any of this right now. But maybe as the story continues, we can tie in a few dots.
I'm really sad about this, but I have all the same questions.
Bummer. I, too, had similar questions. At first, it sounded to me like a procurement sort of thing. Maybe, but it could honestly be anything at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I said that information was scarce, I meant it.
I think more vague than anything.
After her birth, I know nothing else for certain for the first 30 years of her life.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
That is a big, black, who knows. So, listeners, feel free to make up your own stories of Ada growing up and working in a vague place with a vague job description in Austria. At least we have a place. Until 1917, when she married the philosopher Heinrich Gompers. How did they even meet? Who knows?
She's a mystery.
Well, they met in Austria, and that's all we got / what we can assume, because Heinrich was from Austria.
Yeah. Like we said, he was a famous philosopher. For any philosophers out there, they might be familiar with this name.
Well, they said that he was a patient of Sigmund Freud. So, and he was he was buddy buddies with them, but also a patient. So, like, was he crazy? I don't know.
Oh, he just wanted to study his mind.
Yeah.
But as a patient, I don't know.
Sure, why not? Anyone can be a patient.
Yeah. So she started studying at the Vienna School of Arts and Crafts in 1928. Today, the school is known as the University of Applied Arts Vienna. It was started in 1863 as a place of advanced education for designers and craftsmen. It was the first school of its kind in Europe. Famous alumni include one and only Gustav Klimt. And now that I say this, I remember that I also mentioned it in the episode 101.
Yep.
That's what I was just going to say, is that Liana was friends with Gustav Klimt also, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you know how they're connected. They probably, I can't say this for certain, but they might have met in school or been around the same circles.
Right.
Definitely had overlapping friend groups.
Yes.
Exactly. There at this school, she had the opportunity to be a student of Oswald Hardl, Oscar Strand, and Carl Witzmann.
So Oswald Hardl was an Austrian architect who worked on the 1936 Olympics in Berlin.
Okay. So Oscar Strand was an Austrian architect, sculptor, designer, and set designer. He would actually work on a lot of theaters in Vienna, but he is most known for being a part of the duo that started the Vienna School of Architecture.
Right. And Carl Witzmann was an Austrian architect, interior, industrial, and stage designer. And it was a big deal for Ada to learn from all these guys. They were major influences in her work as she moved on with her career.
This is really cool. It sounds like she was learning from really big names at the time, like in that country.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree. And from different sectors too, like stage design, interiors, industrial, all diverse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that she and Liana have this similar background of being really diverse in design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ada even won a prize in 1931 from the school. For what exactly? No one quite says. But they say she was award-winning, and so here we go. She's award-winning now.
Well, way to go, Ada.
She's a winner in our book.
That's right.
She graduated from the Vienna School of Applied Arts in 1932. That same year, she was working with her professor, Oskar Strand, and together they entered the Growing House competition. Not sure if they won this competition, but it was a big deal because you know who else entered it?
Oh, who?
Who?
Mr. Walter Gropius.
Oh.
His entry lives in the Harvard archives. I found that as I was looking for Ada's drawings. I couldn't find Ada's drawings at all, but I found Gropius, so I had to settle for those.
Mm. Oh, man. I wish Ada's drawings were in there, but that's cool that she was in the mix with Gropius.
Yes, bummer. But I'm assuming it's because Gropius won.
It didn't say, and I didn't look that up, so I'm not sure.
Mm.
Listeners, if you find out and you want to send us an email letting us know, we'll update people. Because it's the Ada show today, not the Gropius.
Amen. Tell it.
So I think it's probably because it's Gropius. So there's more research on him.
Yeah.
So it lives there. But anyway, so Ada with Oskar was also involved in the design of the Werkbundsligung in Vienna. I said it with confidence. In English, this is the Vienna Kraftwerk Association housing estate. That's the first time there's like this longer version in English than in German.
Than there is in German.
It's a housing complex made up of 70 houses in Vienna's 13th district. The project was opened in 1932 and was marketed as a model for the modern way of living. To this day, this project is recognized among the most important examples of modernism in Austria.
Amazing. I love that she's on the cutting edge of architecture in Austria.
Yes, that sounds so exciting to be a part of. And who doesn't love a good housing project?
Her and her friend from school, Margaret Zack, began working together in the office of the architect, Erik Boltenstern.
This makes sense, since Erik was a professor at the Vienna School and his connections to Ada's previous professors and mentors. Erik Boltenstern was still impressive in his own right. He had a lot of projects in and all around Vienna and Austria.
While working at Erik's office, she was put in charge of furnishing house number 5 by Hugo Haring and designing the kitchen of house number 33 by Julius Jirasek.
Oh, okay. So she's collaborating on these housing projects.
Yeah, very neat.
I like that they're numbering the houses.
Yeah.
They're like 1, 2, 33.
Simple.
Do you name your houses, Lizzie?
Like the last name of the client.
Client's
last name, residence.
Makes a lot of sense.
I would also think like maybe project numbers. Like, but that's only for like billing purposes.
We have those too, but that's for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. During this time, she became a known kitchen designer and she was a member of the Vienna Saar Optimist Club. Apparently, this is an international volunteer organization that provides women and girls with access to education and training that they need to achieve economic empowerment.
Oh, I love that she's involved with that. It sounds like she's making a bit of a name for herself, too.
Hear, hear.
Okay, I know that you guys still remember because this is pretty fresh in our minds. We're about to enter some turbulent times in Austria, if you remember what we talked about on episode 101.
Yeah, I was wondering when things are going to get dicey.
Agreed. It was only a matter of time.
So in 1934, Heinrich, who was part of the faculty at the University of Vienna, was part of a large group of professors that were forced into retirement. I mean, the dude was 61 years old, so maybe someone could play this off as legit. But Heinrich was pretty sure he was asked to leave because he refused to join the Fatherland Front, a nationalist political party which was mandatory for civil servants during that time.
Hmm. I mean, Heinrich sounds like he has the right instincts, though, right? In retrospect, like...
I think so.
Agreed. Times were really bad. Reading up on some of Ada's early collaborators, like Eric, it came up that since he was, quote-unquote, related to Jews, it would become a disadvantage to his career. I don't even know if he was Jewish or not, but just a statement like that tells you what kind of environment we are talking about, unfortunately.
Yeah. This, along with everything else going on in the country and in Germany, probably had Ada and Heinrich's spidey senses tingling. They were like, nah, dude, this feels wrong. We gotta get out of here. So by 1935, they were headed to the U.S., eventually landing in Los Angeles, California.
Wow, I'm really glad they had the foresight to leave.
Yes, before it got worse.
Mm-hmm. In the USA, Ada made connections. She kept working in her interior designs, projects, kitchens, and furniture.
I love it. I'm glad she was still able to work when she arrived.
Yeah, and that she was able to like keep up this momentum that she had going.
Mm-hmm.
She collaborated with the firm owner, Anita Tour, and when Liana Zimbler came to the United States in 1938, escaping Austria, Ada was able to connect Liana with Anita and Ada. And then Ada and Liana became a duo themselves, often working together on projects.
Yay! Loving these connections and female collaboration.
Yeah, and that's how she came to work with Lady 101, Liana. Love to see it.
Yeah!
Mm-hmm.
For the rest of her career, Ada kept designing interiors and hospitality projects in restaurants, hotels, and retirement homes.
Love it, love it.
Ooh, nice. Sounds like fun.
It does.
Yeah.
Sadly, in 1942, her husband passed away, and I think this was the start of hard times for Ada. 5 years later, she reached out to Austria, like the government, and attempted to receive the pension that was owed to her husband and also the benefits that she would have as a widow. But apparently, the powers that be figured out a loophole and told her, honey, you're an American now. You're an American citizen. So also, your husband retired. He wasn't let go for political reasons, obviously, which we know is bogus, but she lost the fight. They told her, like, we don't owe you nothing.
Oh, no.
Mm-mm.
I mean, after they pushed him out, they double back and claimed he left of his own volition? How rude.
Mm-mm.
Ugh. I'm really sad for Ada, both that her husband died and that she was, like, in a really tough financial situation.
Yes. What nonsense. How terrible for Ada.
In the early 1950s, she resorted to selling her husband's autographs because, like we mentioned before, he was famous among certain circles. And she was also looking for a publisher interested in buying the rights to a biography about the last years of her husband's life.
Oh, no, that's awful.
Yeah, was she able to sell the biography?
I don't think so. All in all, that didn't pan out too well. She passed away in 1954. She was 69 years old. The circumstances were not good. Listeners, this is my official trigger warning. Fast forward 30 seconds to a minute right now. So, she had been missing since June 12, 1954. 2 days later, her body was found on Santa Monica Beach. After an investigation, her death was ruled a suicide.
Oh, no. That's so heartbreaking.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked and sad when I learned about this. And there's really no more information about what exactly was going on, what happened, why. But I will say that I'm glad that she was able to do what she loved for years and collaborated with others, and that she was a great network connection for Liana when Liana arrived to the U.S., and that they got to work together.
Yeah, that's so tough because, I mean, we can never know the full story of what someone's going through, right? But I'm just sad to hear that the end of her life took such a tough turn and that she was hurting that much. But I'm glad that we got to learn about the work that she did and how she collaborated with Liana and other architects throughout her career, both in Austria and the U.S.
Yeah, wow, totally unexpected. And like you said, we never know what people are going through. And we don't know what kind of grief she must have gone through between her husband and Eva Anita Tour. Plus the financial implications with the loss of her husband. Despite the end, I'm still glad we got to tell her story. I'm glad that we got to learn about her work. And because of this story, we know that her work mattered and that she mattered. And hopefully somehow, some way, she knows that her work is something that we'll still look at to this day.
Yeah. All right. Now we have reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Drum roll, please. Katie Donahue. Katie Donahue is a registered architect in the United States, working on projects at various scales. She is a consultant at Handel Architects in New York and Denver. And most importantly for today's episode, Katie is the business partner of the caryatid for Liana Zimbler's episode. And as we've mentioned, Liana was a business partner with Ada, so this felt like a good fit.
Ooh, I love this.
Me too. I am liking this continuation we got going on between 101 and this episode.
Mm-hmm. It's like part two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Katie is the co-director of K-Works, which she runs with past caryatid Katarina Horath.
Yeah. Also, I didn't realize that it's like Kate and Katie.
That's right. K-Works.
K-Works.
K-Works. It works.
Hey.
As a firm, K-Works Studio focuses on residential design, architectural installations, and sustainability. As paraphrased from their website, Katie is particularly interested in exploring how design solutions address issues of culture, environment, and neighborhoods, and the ways placemaking affects the vitality of cities.
Love to see it. All important factors.
At Handel Architects, she is responsible for ground-up development, mostly in mixed-use projects.
She's really doing double duty with two jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Katie's got degrees on degrees on degrees. Bachelor of Business Administration from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and an architecture degree not only from one school, Cornell University, but also from the University of Colorado.
Mm.
Wow. She's collecting them.
Gotta catch them all. Yeah, it's interesting because she got her business degree before architecture school. It's kind of cool. Usually it's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
She served on the board of directors for Architecture for Humanity and the Denver chapter board for the AIA.
Okay, killing it with the extracurriculars.
Yeah.
She's also out there in the world teaching design, representation, drawing, and rendering at the University of Colorado, Denver, and Parsons School of Design, molding the future of the profession.
Holy moly, what isn't she doing?
Yeah. I wonder if she co-teaches with Kat.
Yeah.
Could be. In 2014, she was awarded Young Architect of the Year by AIA Colorado. Oh, well-deserved.
Phenomenal. I love to see that she's got her hand in so many different places with work, teaching and other organizations. She's doing it all.
Yeah. Honestly, it makes sense why she would win this award with what she has going on.
Yeah.
Very neat.
Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and Caryatid along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, colleagues, sisters, and brothers, and tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify, and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate. Or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We're excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com, leave a comment on our website at shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on X at shebuildspod. Until then, see ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello. Welcome to She Builds Podcasts.
No, we don't do those anymore.
Sorry. Where we share stories about women in the design.
No.
Najdi.
What?
We don't do those anymore.
Oh, sh.
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.